Hello, everybody. This is Jeff Horwich, and I've got just a very quick note for our regular podcast listeners, kind of a quick preamble so you can know what the heck you just downloaded here, because it's not actually in the loop, and I don't want people to be confused. I'm just back from Denver, and this show is part of American Public Media's political convention coverage. It's something called Behind Party Lines, and I'll explain it fully once it starts. I was asked to host and was more than happy to do so. It does have certainly a kind of an in-the-loop feel to it, so I hope you enjoy it. Of course, this is a podcast, so if it's not your thing, if you're not really digging it, feel free to bail out and just hang in there. We'll have another episode of The Week from In the Loop coming up in just a day or so. Now that I'm back in town, we'll get that put together. But give it a shot, and I think it came out pretty well. We had a good time making it, and I hope you have a good time listening. Thanks. Hello from Denver, home of the 2008 Democratic National Convention. I'm Jeff Horwich. We're about to bring you a very different hour in the midst of all this convention coverage. There are thousands of people in town for this feel-good festival of democratic unity, millions more feeling the rush at home. We're asking, what actually makes a Democrat? What does that label really mean today, anyway? We're going to put the speeches, pundits, and political heavyweights aside to dig into this with about 20 people, delegates and party volunteers from around the country. Let's get our group warmed up here with a little bit of word association. Okay, who's ready? Democrat, go.
Action.
Equality.
Reform.
The golden rule.
Working together.
Think.
Involvement.
Justice.
Education.
All right, just to wet your whistle a little bit, some of the voices we've got for Behind Party Lines, that's the name of our program, What It Means to Be a Democrat. It's a one-of-a-kind hour from American Public Media, coming up right after the news. Welcome back to our program, Behind Party Lines, What It Means to Be a Democrat. It's a show from American Public Media. My name is Jeff Horwich. We are at Colorado Public Radio out in Denver, and I'm with about 20 people, delegates and volunteers, Democrats, all of them, who are going to talk to us about that question. All of you, turn off your cell phones. I know you're expecting maybe another text message from Barack Obama, but this is your last chance to get those turned off. A little bit about where we're coming from, where this concept originated. In my day-to-day job, I'm the host of something called In the Loop, which is a part of something else at Minnesota Public Radio and American Public Media called Public Insight Journalism. And here's that in a nutshell. It says, you know, with all the news that we're getting day in and day out, we get quite enough of the pundits and officially designated experts out there. Oftentimes, we can learn as much, maybe even more, from the people who are out there in the world, in the mix, just experiencing what's going on. They're experts sort of in their own right. And that is the inspiration for gathering this group of people here with us today in Denver. So thank you all for taking a break from your busy convention activities. And as we get started, let me just mention, we're doing the same thing next week with the Republicans in St. Paul. Here's our hope for this hour. I want to get beyond the easy answers, the canned answers, to the core of why we hold our political allegiances. It's not really about why you like Barack or Hillary, if some of you are still smarting from that. It's not even so much about the specific policy proposals Democrats are pushing in this election, though that's certainly related to it. This is about how, on a personal level, we decide which side of this political system we attach ourselves to. So I want to know from all of you where you get the beliefs that bind you all together under this one-party label, and what it means that you call yourselves Democrats. Let's start with just kind of a blank slate. I want to call out for a story here from somebody. The moment you knew the Democrats, this is going to be my party. Who wants to start? Let's go right over there to Jeff.
To yes. Jeff. I'm Jeff from Pleasanton, California. The moment I knew I wanted to be a Democrat was after I'd been a Republican for about 19 years. And in the 90s, when Newt Gingrich came to power and all his associates in Congress, I knew then that my principles, my faith principles, guide me towards social justice. And at that point in time, I knew I wanted to be a Democrat because that's the party for me that stands for social justice.
Was there something you saw or experienced in particular during that period that was sort of the light bulb above your head?
I saw all the moderate Republicans being pushed out of the party, and I saw it being a conscious effort on those who were in power. If you don't agree with us, we don't want you. And I was one I felt not wanted.
Let's go over here across the room. What was your moment?
Enrique from Portland, Oregon. Similar to Jeff, I had the experience after suffering through the Reagan 80s and being a Latino, watching the Reagan policies do such damage to Latin America and Central America, and I realized this has to stop. It's not what America's about. It's just not.
Now, we've got a few folks from elsewhere in the country that we caught up with by phone preparing for this show. And Enrique, your story reminded me of one from Claire. Let's cue that up and listen to Claire's story.
My name is Claire Jabrian, and I live in Houston, Texas, and I am a Democrat. So I was a really politically interested child, and I grew up in a split household. My mom was a Democrat, and my dad was a Republican. But I was completely enthralled by Ronald Reagan's rhetoric, so much so that during the 84 election, I would search through Time and Newsweek looking for pictures of Reagan and Bush and cut them out and add them to my collection that was plastered all over my wall. But my disillusionment began in seventh grade. As part of my speech and drama class, we had to prepare a debate topic. And the topic that year was whether the United States should support the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. And through my research, I read accounts of nuns and priests who witnessed entire villages slaughtered and other nuns and women and children assaulted and raped and murdered at the hands of the Contras. And I was completely appalled. And I took these accounts to my dad, who was a very strong Republican, and he said the nuns were lying. And I was just completely disgusted. That summer, the Iran-Contra scandal broke, and that marked the definitive end of my support of the Republican Party. So now I'm very proud to be a well-informed, very liberal, progressive Democrat.
Of course, it's Claire from Houston. Anybody else have this hit them as a child? Oh, my goodness. That's most of the hands in the room. Yeah.
I'm Martha from Davis, California. My parents were both very politically savvy and interested, and I remember after they had had a discussion one evening, I got up the next morning and I said, "Mom, what's a darn Republican?" And from then on, we talked politics more and more at our dinner table, and so it's kind of my family culture. We went to labor rallies. My dad was a union member, and I remember seeing Jesse UNRRA way back in the day, and you know, I just grew up with that culture in my home.
Sure, let's go over here.
Good morning. I'm Aaron from Portland, Oregon. I have been a Democrat actually since I was 8 years old. I worked with my dad, who was a precinct captain in the neighborhoods of Chicago. And as a kid, I would go with him, carry the literature, and I found that going with him and watching him interact with the neighbors, it made me understand, first of all, that the Democratic Party was a party of the people, but also it was a working man's party. And it really got me invigorated and have been a lifelong Democrat ever since.
What was it about your experiences with your dad, and you hit on it briefly there, but that helped you understand what the party meant then, and I presume still means to you now?
Yes. One of the things, it was one of helping. I saw him help people in the neighborhood, whether it was trying to get something for their kids in school, whether it was trying to help an elderly person be able to pay their rent. And I watched how he worked through the party and through individuals in the party on up the line. And that made me understand that the Democratic Party is a party that helps those who are in need. And certainly back during those times, it was a party that showed that. It was more visible. And so today, I'm starting to see that come back. And that's what's really made me excited.
I want to talk about that more, sort of where the party has meandered over the years and where it is today. Let's get a few more of these origin stories, I guess. Yeah.
I'm Derek Jackson. I'm from Michigan. And, around my dinner table, we never really talked about politics. It just wasn't something that was a part of the conversation. But I grew up in a neighborhood that I guess you could just term as underserved, so to speak. And there was a specific incident in the neighborhood. We were kind of young folks outside playing. And I just remember seeing a guy kind of run up and actually had a gun out. And as he did that. I remember standing there, and maybe I was too stupid to run away, but all my friends ran away, and I kind of stood there, kind of really, you know, staring at this guy. And I remember thinking after that, you know, after the situation had eased and tensions, you know, prevailed or went away and folks went away, I remember thinking, like, you know, like, why me? Like, why did something not happen to me in that particular situation? So it was less about politics and more about social justice. And I became very engaged at a young age about how do you change your community. And so from there, my interest in politics, my interest in party politics just kind of grew. And slowly but surely, I seen that social justice and the Democratic Party kind of go hand in hand. And that's how I became a Democrat.
Derek, your story makes me think of another person that we caught up preparing for the show and this notion of justice. Let's listen to Justin.
My name's Justin. I typically vote Democrat. I live in Minneapolis. I started listening to a lot of different music in the 90s, and including Rage Against the Machine. And so the more I listened to Rage Against the Machine, I started to look into like what their songs were about. I mean, I listened to it just because I liked the sound of it, but then the more I started to look into the words and look into the literature that they included on their albums and the information on their website, that led me to the political realm that I'm in now, I guess. In a lot of Rage's songs, they talk about injustice type things, for example, like the Mumia Abu Jamal case in Philadelphia. So I started reading about that and just issues with Native Americans, and everything just kind of led to the next step and the next step, and really just got me on this track of looking into social injustices. I think the very first time I voted for Ralph Nader in the Green Party, because he seemed to talk about these things more than the Democratic Party did, at least with Al Gore. And now today, I mean, so with like Dennis Kucinich, now like you have Obama, and he's talking about a lot of these things too, or at least he was talking about a lot of these things during the primaries along with Hillary Clinton. Now I'm an economist, and now it's more for me looking at data and trying to find data to support these types of claims rather than relying solely on a ultra-left-wing magazine, for example. As I progress, I think Rage, I mean, they're pretty far out there, I guess. So I don't agree with everything they stand for, but I always appreciate when bands are making a political type statement in their songs. Those type of songs tend to influence me more than other music.
Now, aside from the really cool notion, I guess, of a high school kid listening to Rage Against the Machine and becoming an economist later on, what is this? What's the justice thing? A lot of people bring this up, social justice or just justice in general. Why is it the Democrats, you know, corner the market, in your mind, on justice issues?
Hi, my name is Lakeisha. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. My grandmother was born in a little small town in Alabama called Flatwood, Alabama. And she moved to Mobile as a young child. And one of the stories that she used to tell me, is because during the civil rights era, was the first time she ever saw the signs white and colored over a water fountain. And she thought that white and colored meant the color of the water. She didn't really think of it as seeing as the color of her skin. And she remembers, she told me about, as she was making her choice about whether she wanted the white water because it was clear or the colored water because maybe it had been colored, she thought maybe if she go to the white water fountain, she can get clear water. And as she made her way to the water fountain, a man came up to her and basically admonished her for going to this white water fountain. And she wondered why, and he said because she was black. And so that story has always stayed with me. And now that, you know, at 16 years old, I became a Democrat. And it's because of President Bill Clinton, who was at the time Governor Bill Clinton, who took the time out after me writing a letter to him, wrote me a letter back to tell me how inspiring my words were to him as a young person in this country. And so I'm a big on social justice, and I'm actually getting ready to go to law school and become a constitutional civil rights attorney so I can work on behalf of those people who can't speak for themselves. So I don't care what anyone else says. Being a Democrat is about making things right for people who cannot speak for themselves. And if you don't have a voice, that's where the Democratic Party comes in. We speak up for you.
Not to nitpick, of course, but Jim Crow is a legacy of, what, the Democrats in the South. So something's happened to this party, in your eyes at least. Who wants to tell me about that?
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm from Ellensburg, Washington. And I think something that's really interesting is that
I'm Jewish. My dad is. My mom's not. So my dad grew up in the Deep South. And so I get to interact with my grandparents and talking about politics. And, you know, that ends up being a multiple hour conversation each and every time with a lot of tangents. But, I mean, something that I've really been learning as I grew up, I always knew I was a Democrat because my family was, and now I'm really understanding why as I get older. 28, I'm finally starting to figure some things out. But one of the things that they really point out, I mean, you know, if you're talking about justice, I mean, my dad as a kid couldn't use the local country club because he was Jewish. White, but Jewish. But he also remembers, you know, the colored and the whites, drinking fountains and all of that. And my grandparents really have been teaching me about what really happened and what the Democratic Party used to stand for. And yes, the Democratic Party was all about Jim Crow laws. And that was very painful to me. It was like finding out about an abusive relationship, I think. But I think really seeing, and I'm reading the history of Lyndon Johnson right now and about when the change really started to take place. And my grandparents' stories about everybody down here used to be Democrat, but when the race laws started to change and Jim Crow started to go away, a lot of people slipped away and they became Republican. And knowing that that really was a change and that there was some kind of inherent fear of giving up the power that I have to acknowledge that I have as a white middle-class person, I have power that other people don't. And if I want to really work for justice as a Democrat or as anybody else, I have to know that means I need to give up some of my power. And I think that is something that the Democrats really started to understand and do for justice. You have to give up the power you have as an individual, and that is a scary feeling and it's uncomfortable, but it's the right thing to do. And that's what the Democrats have started to really transition and do.
It's a pretty clear statement on what it means to be a Democrat. And let me remind you, you are listening to a show from American Public Media called Behind Party Lines, where we're asking a group of delegates and volunteers, Democrats all, about this question of what it really means to identify with that party. I'm Jeff Horwich. Jeff, let's go to you.
Thank you. I'm Jeff from California. And social injustice is what gets me riled up. It makes me angry inside when I see social injustice. Becoming aware of the world around me and seeing everything goes on is something that really bothers me because of my faith principles. As a Christian, I take to heart the words of Matthew 25:40, which is, you know, whatever you do unto the least of me, you do unto me also. And that really resonates. Jesus spoke primarily of love God, love your neighbor, help the poor, help the outcast. It can be boiled down to that. I think those are all reasons why people are Democrats and want to be Democrats.
Thank you for bringing us there, Jeff. I actually want to go on to that point now for a bit. Religion is likely to play a greater role, I think, in the rhetoric at this convention and on the Democratic side, potentially, in this upcoming election than it is on the Republican side. And that is a change from the past. I like that you shared that religion's a motivator for you. Is this something that's sort of been buried, neglected? Is anybody uncomfortable with the fact that Democrats are now talking about God and religion quite a bit? Do you want to take that one?
Elizabeth from Oregon. And actually, when I was asked to be a part of this discussion and was thinking to myself, what does it mean to be a Democrat as a lifelong practicing Catholic of a very large extended Latino family. My mom has 12 brothers and sisters. My dad has 9 brothers and sisters. On one side of my family, I have 52 first cousins. And the first thought that came to me is what it means to be a Democrat is I get to live out my faith in my political beliefs. My God teaches me that we are people that want to help others, that the service that we give comes back to us, you know, tenfold. And that's what I think the Democratic Party is about. It's about serving others. It's about being a servant to those that you have power or authority over. And so having been in public service now for almost 20 years, I think religion, at least for me, it is why I'm a Democrat.
Elizabeth, thank you. Well, the party is changing, and religion may be part of this, just on the abortion issue even. Let's think about the other people who are on that short list for vice president. Tim Kaine, Evan Bayh, Kathleen Sebelius, all of them, to some degree, pro-life. with not holding the traditional sort of party platform view. Any three of them, quite easily, given a, you know, a different meeting or a different impression by Barack Obama, could be the vice presidential nominee right now. This is your party changing. These are people in your party who are changing the dialogue around this issue. What does that mean? What does that mean for the party? What's it mean to you?
Okay, I might be the only atheist in residence here.
I have to remind you to tell us where you're
from. Good, my people. Oh, I am Donna from Phoenix, Arizona. And I have to say, I'm an Obama supporter, and I know that he has a very deep personal faith, and I'm perfectly okay with it. And I'm perfectly fine and comfortable with the presence of religious faith and even discussions about religion in the party. That's what being a big tent is all about. Certainly, that's a big factor in my being a Democrat. I was raised as a Catholic, and I decided at a very young age, probably 4, you know, that this is not for me. But, you know, I went along with what was expected of me. And certainly I knew I would never be comfortable in the Republican Party. What I see happening with them, it just goes, it's a type of religiosity that goes so much beyond the real spiritual realm. It's more about control and dominance and dogma. And
on the Republican side.
On the Republican side. I mean, I think the whole... the co-opting of the Republican Party by the evangelical Christians, who I have nothing against, by the way. I think they are being manipulated by the people, the elitists there, to, you know, get them out to the polls. You should be very concerned.
Let's focus this on the Democrats, because your party is changing, mm-hmm. too. You said at the outset you're not the only atheist in the room, but you wondered if you were.
Yeah. I came out of the closet recently. I mean, seriously. You know? It was one of those things. I ran for office 2 years ago in Arizona, and I couldn't admit that I was an atheist, you know?
Is the party a safer place for you now than it was?
Depending on where you live. I think if I lived in San Francisco, I could probably run as an out atheist.
But what about all the God talk, I guess, that we're hearing from the Democrats.
Again, it doesn't really bother me. I believe if, you know, you are entitled to believe whatever you want, and this is a free country, and you're entitled to talk about it. If you don't impose it on me, we're fine.
People very excited about this issue. Let's go across the room to Linda.
I'm Linda from Rochester, New York, and I identify myself as a Jew culturally. However, I have finally come to terms with the fact and can say it out loud that I am an atheist, because if I do believe that if there were a God, the world would be a better place. And I just can't reconcile that whole issue. And I believe that the important thing in life is to be a moral person. And as a Democrat, my goal and the reason why I identify as a Democrat is because I want to change the world. And also, as an adult, I have come to terms with the fact that I can only change it incrementally. And so I do what I can, and I have lived my life to make these incremental changes and make my universe a better place for everybody who I can impact. And to me, that's what's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, because a Republican thinks that if I make more money, I will make my universe a better place. And to me, that's the major difference.
Let's go back across the room to Enrique.
Hi, I'm Enrique from Portland, Oregon. I'm chair of the Faith Caucus for the state of Oregon. And, you know, the first, when I started that movement within the party and stuff, it was great, because what I saw is a lot of Democrats are of faith. And the thing was, is that, you know, when some guy was going, well, how can you do that? And I go, well, we don't take our faith and bully people. And we don't use it as a weapon, you know. We believe in the First Amendment. And it's because of the First Amendment that we are the most diverse religious country in the world. And the other thing, too, is like I always tell people, I have my biggest supporters in my caucus are atheists. I have agnostics. I have Buddhists. I have everybody. And when an atheist said, you know, I really love what you're doing, can I be a part of it? I said, of course, you know. And they go, I believe in peace and social justice. And I go, you wake up every morning working towards that? And they go, yeah. And I go, that's your faith system.
So it's a way of being religious. Thank you. Somebody we haven't heard from yet, Asra.
My name is Asra Hussein from Chicago, Illinois. I'm a Muslim. I'm an American. I'm a Democrat. I feel if I were in the Republican Party, I'd have to leave at least one of those things off the list. And I appreciate the Democratic Party because I don't have evangelicals telling me that I'm one of the heathens or the terrorists that are out to destroy America. And I'm here and trying to help build it up and make it a better place for my kids and everyone else's kids, regardless of what religion they practice, regardless if they even practice religion. And I mean, I just think that that's what makes the Democratic Party so great, is that we have that freedom and that we are inclusive to everybody regardless.
Well, and in fact, interestingly, Obama's making quite a play for evangelical voters, people who maybe talk about God and faith in a little bit different way, but trying to even broaden the tent to include them. Are you comfortable with that? I mean, what if the dialogue absorbs some of the people typically on the Republican side who talk about their faith quite differently traditionally?
Hi, my name is Pam, and I'm a nurse from Seattle, Washington. And I think that we're in a time right now where the historic identity of the Democratic Party is in complete flux. I think how we understand ourselves as a world is in flux. We have a global economy. We have global relationships that are inseparable. We are completely dependent on each other. So we're seeing that within the Democratic Party. We have incongruencies. We all of a sudden, this party that has been built on the separation of church and state is talking about God all over the place, is starting to court evangelicals like you're talking about. And so, you know, my identity is thrown.
Thank you for bringing that up. Does that make it hard for you, and I'm going to keep the microphone with you for a minute, to answer this question now, what it means to be a Democrat in a broader sense?
It makes me excited because I feel like for the first time the inclusiveness that we've been talking about intellectually is being manifest on the real level.
But when do you lose your way, you know, when Bill Clinton is declared, you know, the era of big government is over, and when religion becomes a really key talking point in the Democrats, is there a point where the tent becomes too big?
Hi, Lakeisha from Birmingham, Alabama again. I'm proud to say that I am a Christian. Republicans do not have the beeline on being a Christian. A Christian doesn't mean that you're a Republican. A Christian means you're a Christian. You're a follower of Christ. You believe in Christ. And for my friends who are atheists, I'm like, right on, brother and sister, because I you have your faith, you have your beliefs, but we're Democrats. This tent is not too big for all of us. It is all, you know, we're all one big community, one party, one nation, and it shouldn't matter whether you're Baptist, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, whatever. We are all one people. We bleed the same. You understand? We put our pants and our skirts on one leg at a time.
You know, that sounds wonderful. Thank you very much, Lakeisha. You know, it does sound great, and I know all of you in this room believe it. It's kind of a nice opportunity to make a little shift here, and this might be kind of fun and interesting. We thought if we really want to get at this question of what it means to be a Democrat, it seemed like we had to maybe ask the other side about that question. So before we came out to Denver, I wandered over to a Republican gathering, which is just across the street from where the convention there is going to happen in St. Paul. And I asked them, what does it mean to be a Democrat? Here's what they had to say.
Democrats stand for bigger government, higher taxes.
Republicans are usually realists and Democrats are idealists.
More regulation. More government mandates.
I think that they look at more the negative side.
They are opposed to freedom.
They like to throw money at a problem.
Democrats tend to believe that government's the solution.
I feel that a Democrat is out of touch with the needs that we have right now.
I just don't view the Democrats as being as practical when it comes to approaching some of the fundamental issues.
The Democrat Party is the party of yesterday.
A Democrat would be somebody that doesn't believe in the same things that I do. It's as plain as that.
Democrat strategy is retreat. Retreat from the world.
It's a lot of ambiguity, I guess, is what it comes down to. We're going to get out of Iraq. When? Well, we're not sure, but we're going to do it as soon as we can.
Not a false optimism, but sort of a fantastic view of how things will come about.
The nature of the Democratic Party is not for a specific.
If only we do this, if only we do that, that, you know, everything will end up beautiful or something.
I see a lot of random, like, ooh, rah, rah. the classic cliche now that everyone makes fun of is the change thing.
It's really been Democrats that have gotten very emotional and very angry and very personal against Republicans.
Often their heart's in the right place.
That doesn't make Democrats bad people.
You know, I think they mean well, but I think their ideas are all screwed up.
All right, I figured that'd get some of you going. Let me mention that you're listening to Behind Party Lines from American Public Media. We're talking about what it means to be a Democrat, and we're out here in Denver. I'm Jeff Horwich. So we heard a lot of fun notions in there. One big theme was just wishy-washy, you know? It's about viewing the world. You know, it's maybe sort of a false optimism. You know, everything's going to turn out great, but we don't really have the specifics on how to get there. I know lots of you want to defend the party here, so let's get to it. Let's go over here to Derek.
Derek from Michigan again. I think this notion of us being wishy-washy, I think it comes from or can be tied to inclusiveness. And, you know, because we are so inclusive, as you were talking earlier, Jeff, about the tent being so large, I think you have all these different diverse ideas and concepts. And so to some folks from the outside, maybe that may seem wishy-washy, but I would put it to you in this way. Diversity for the sake of diversity is just diversity. It's not that big of a deal. But when you really break it down, you know, we as individuals, maybe someone in this room has a very high IQ, very, very intelligent, but none of us as an individual are smarter than all 20 of us. None of us as an individual has the answers to these very tough social questions or questions of that we are dealing with around the world today. And so I think that for folks on the outside, they may see that and say, well, they're talking about this, they talk about that. Presidential candidates are talking about this and this and this. So they may seem wishy-washy, but I think that's because we are such a big tent.
Yeah, let's jump back over here to Jennifer.
Yeah, I think Derek, I mean, definitely right on. I think the thing is that Democrats have really understood that so many issues are nuanced. And the Republicans have had think tanks, and the conservatives had think tanks, and they have simplified everything because, as Americans right now, we need to admit that's how the majority of us take in information. And so I think one of the reasons that religion is back on the table is because so many Americans said, well, neither party is actually going to help me financially or economically, so I'm at least going to vote for the party that represents my values. The Republicans got the monopoly on that. That's why religion's back on the table. It never really left, but Democrats hadn't been talking about it, and we realize we need to. And I do want to readdress the abortion issue. I think we kind of moved on quickly. We call it anti-choice because, of course, I'm pro-life. I'm pro-life. I'm pro-quality of life. I'm pro-healthy children. I'm pro-healthy families. I'm pro-working wages.
Sure.
Okay. So the real question is anti-choice. So a lot of Democrats who are anti-choice, though, are still, if you are anti-abortion, then you need to be pro-birth control. If you are anti-abortion, you need to be pro-comprehensive, medically accurate, age-appropriate sexuality education.
And I have to say, though, you're defining, to some extent, the limits of the tent. You're saying you can join our tent, you can, you know, but we're gonna, you know, we're gonna define you using the word anti-choice, for example.
You know what? I don't care if you're anti-choice, if you're whatever. If you are really working to make lives better for individual men, women, and children in this country, you are really a Democrat. Come on in and help us out.
Well, we have to take a brief pause here for broadcast reasons. I'm Jeff Horwich. You're listening to Behind Party Lines from Denver, looking at the question, what does it mean to be a Democrat? We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Behind Party Lines. I'm Jeff Horwich. We're in Denver, and we're looking at the question, what does it mean to be a Democrat? It's a show from American Public Media, and we're lucky to have about 20 Democrats, delegates, and volunteers with us here in the studios of Colorado Public Radio. We've been talking about the tent. How big should it be? Is it endlessly big? How do we define, you know, who belongs there and who doesn't? Religion, economic issues, social justice, all have been a part of our conversation. And I'm going to go now across the room to Betsy.
I'm Betsy from North Carolina, and I would like to comment on one of the Republican statements that says that Democrats want to retreat from the world. And I couldn't be more 180 degrees opposed to that statement. I think Democrats want to engage with the world, not necessarily send troops everywhere throughout the world, but build collaborative relationships in the world. During the past 2 years, I've lived in Budapest, Hungary, doing my dissertation research, and I have never felt as strong of anti-American sentiment throughout much of the countries that I traveled in. And I've done a fair amount of traveling through most of my life, and it's the sense was shocking. People coming up to me on the street saying, what's your administration doing? And I think the Democrats will change what's going on with our foreign policy.
Do Democrats want to advance democracy? This is one that that came up, and it didn't make it into the editing of that segment from the Republicans, but in greater detail. They don't really care about whether we advance democracy around the world. Rob?
The Democratic Party will be the party that will re-engage with the world. We need to do that. I mean, these decisions have deep personal impacts on people's lives. I lost my nephew in Iraq, and we headed in the wrong direction. We were attacked. We had every right to respond. We had every opportunity to marshal the world to destroy al-Qaeda and to reduce that threat and to work in Afghanistan to do that. Look at Afghanistan today. We have taken our eye off the ball, and that country is a mess. That's where we should have been. Where is bin Laden? George Bush certainly doesn't know. So we have the opportunity to make the right choices, work with our allies, make the world safer, strengthen our alliances around the world in many ways. And we have gone the complete opposite direction. And it has, as I said, personal impact on people's lives as well. Right.
Thank you, Rob. And that raises a good question in line with our theme. What are the democratic values that we bring to bear trying to, say, fix Afghanistan, presuming that Barack Obama becomes the next president, like you'd all hope? What does a Democratic Party bring? What values, what approach that define being a Democrat do you bring to that task? Jeff?
Yes, I'm Jeff from Pleasanton, California. I think to advance democracy around the world, we can best do it by leading by example. In the past, we haven't invaded countries unilaterally. We've had programs to help people in the world. CARE helps people in the world, and the crates say from the people of the United States, or USAID, U.S. Agency for International Development. We can lead by example. Government, when people get together to do things, they call it government. And government exists to help people. I would take issue with someone who says we are about big government. We're about the big picture.
Let's stay on this question of foreign policy, because until fairly recently, the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, that was the issue of this campaign. And things have changed a bit. Healthcare seems to be top of mind right now. But the war is not going to go away. What do Democrats bring values-wise, commitment-wise, to fixing what most of us really do agree has been screwed up?
Sure.
Linda.
Linda from Rochester, New York. George Bush's idea about imposing democracy on other countries is just an oxymoron. Democracy is something that should be springing up from the residents of the country who want it.
But if they don't want it in Afghanistan, and you've got the Taliban, say, resurgent over there, what do you do?
You don't do it by Americans killing Afghani citizens. We funded the Taliban to fight the Russians. I mean, we totally created that monster, and that's the kind of thing that the Americans have done over and over again. I mean, the story I was going to tell about why I initially realized I was a Democrat had to do with Vietnam. Why do we keep imposing our values on other countries? There has to be a better way, because it certainly has proven itself over and over again that when we do, more bad may come from it than good.
Sure. Thank you, Linda. And that's the long view and very important. Let's jump over here. I'm not sure who's had their hand up longer, but yes.
Elizabeth from Portland, Oregon. Fabricating information to take us into a war that we should never have been in, and taking our eye off of where we needed to be. I mean, I think it's criminal.
Well, the Republicans get that too at this point, I think. You'd have a hard time convincing anybody that we did an awesome job going into Iraq.
I mean, I want to go back to your question about how you fix it.
Please, yeah.
You fix it by turning to the people that had the judgment, like Barack Obama, to say, we should have stayed in Iraq. I'm not going to tell you would have any clue about exactly, you know, the strategy, the tactical strategy, but we fix it by electing people and leaders in office that know where we need to go. And I can tell you, from being a Latina in this country, this is a critical issue for us. We are the fastest growing population in this country, and I can tell you, I do not want my grandsons going to Iraq.
Now, bringing up your ethnicity, I guess, your background, reminds me of somebody else that we talked with in preparing for this show, and let's hear from her. Somebody who has become a little bit uncomfortable with where the Democratic Party is today, though Barack may be winning her back. Let's hear that. This is Inez.
My name is Inez Anchondo, and I live in El Paso, Texas, on the U.S.-Mexico border, and I tend to vote Democrat. I moved from Mexico to the United States exactly around the time when I started to vote. The first election that I voted to in this country was Clinton in 1992. You know, in the process of learning about Clinton, I did learn more about the Democratic Party, and then I became actually a card-carrying, I guess, Democrat, and began to give money to the Democratic Party. It was basically all of the issues that he was proposing to work on, the social causes, and in particular the healthcare system policies. In the beginning of this election process, I was not, I didn't consider myself a Democrat. I became sort of disillusioned with the Democratic Party. And then the Democrats, I think, want to say that they're, you know, looking for the interest of the disenfranchised and the poor and the, you know, all of this. I think they want to say it. But I think that in the last administration, even though President Bush leaned on, you know, wanting to have, you know, come up with some kind of program for Mexican workers and other Hispanics, it doesn't have to be only for Mexicans. The fact that even with a president that wanted to do this, Democrats did not take the lead on this. They did not come up with any solution. I think the Democrats are divided in wanting to make this work. I think that the Democrats have failed, you know, dramatically at this.
And just to put a little context to some else what Inez had to say, she does feel that Barack Obama has maybe more of a sensitivity than the party has had in the past 4 years. But she raises something very interesting. You would have thought that, immigration reform, especially with a president who seemed to want to work together on it and had ideas that departed from his own party, might have been something that the Democrats could make happen, whether it was politics, whether it was sort of internal disagreements. What happened with immigration? Do you agree with Inez that the party failed here? Yes.
Well, I do want to respond to the caller, because that caller has bought into one of the untruths about the biggest untruths about immigration that people have about this perception that people have about this administration. They never wanted immigration reform. For the caller to think that this administration wanted immigration reform, what this administration wanted was to be able to create slave labor in our farm worker camps. And that's why Democrats said, no, we're not going to allow big corporate business to come in and basically use our immigrant population as slaves, not pay them fair wages, because we know what that would do to our economy. We know what that would do to the blue-collar worker in terms of salaries. So it wasn't that that Democrats failed. It was this administration was never supportive of immigration.
Sure. Let's go to Enrique.
I think the problem was when Bush was talking about immigration is he was not proposing anything about corporate responsibility in regards to enforcement. People don't realize a lot of corporate America actually recruits, you know, people in Central America to come. And they say this state has a state healthcare system and we'll sign you up with that state's healthcare system. And a lot of people who come here don't even want to come here because they live in beautiful places, but they come here because their children are sick. They come here, you know, because there is no economy because of NAFTA destroying their economy. I have Mexican friends. I don't know anyone, you know, it's like my parents. I mean, they came from Cuba. It's this beautiful paradise. They didn't want to leave, you know. And the thing is that the Bush administration, it always comes down to money over children. It's money over workers. And, you know, God forbid we find a company, we find a corporation that has millions of dollars for breaking immigrant laws. And that's where you have to start.
Donna.
You shouldn't compromise.
Donna from Phoenix, Arizona, obviously a hotbed of the immigration issue.
I find as a progressive, as a Democrat, living in Arizona, where this is such a hot topic, I find, and many of my friends kind of concur with me on this, you're put in this uncomfortable position where they're basically, you're given two kind of choices where immigration is concerned. Like, you can either be with the Lou Dobbs, xenophobic, you know, hating everybody that isn't, you know, white lobby, or you can support the big business, cheap labor, exploiting people side. And I'm not comfortable in either one of those places. There's debate over whether we should call, should we call them illegal immigrants? Should we call them undocumented? I see that many of them, the ones that come here to work, you know, as they're economic refugees. And it's ridiculous when you have people in the Democratic Party, you know, talking about immigration reform and talking about how, well, yeah, let's create these guest worker programs that are, you know, ongoing, you know, forever and ever, where we can just funnel, you know, poor, impoverished, politically neutered people that can't join unions into this country to work for $6 an hour in unsafe conditions. And I'm sorry, I don't consider that immigration reform. And I think as progressives, this is why we are ceding the moral high ground to the Lou Dobbs.
Well, you bring up something very interesting with Lou Dobbs, who takes very much sort of a worker's perspective. That's a rift in the party that seems to me, it's immigration is one example where there's a real challenge. You have sort of the social justice instincts, right, to look out for people who need help and who are not taken care of by this country and who do something important for it. But on the other hand, you have, say, blue-collar workers who are worried about losing jobs and see immigration in a very different light. And many of those people fit into the Democratic tent. How do you resolve what seems like sort of a fundamental conflict like that and still call everybody a Democrat?
I see the two. This is Martha from Davis, California. I see the issue of immigration and foreign policy as being very intertwined. If we were giving help to foreign nations in education and in their economy and building their economy, people would want to stay home. As Enrique said, most of the students I work with in Davis who are Spanish speakers have families who would much prefer to be in Mexico, living there in their own culture, but they come because there is some hope of getting ahead economically. Had we helped their country and built a policy of support for them, they would not be a drain on our employment situation. I think that it also on our policy in Iraq. What we need to do, starting in the Middle East, is education and economic assistance. You know, helping families grow something besides poppies, making education the most important thing to help children understand that there is another option. They're going to understand democracy, and it goes back to, you know, do we enforce democracy? Children are going to learn about the ways of the world, and then they will come to their own conclusions about freedom rather than imposing that from us. But the immigration issue is so tied to economics.
I want to throw one more issue into the mix here, and I thought of this watching the convention the other night. Brian Schweitzer, governor of Montana. Many of you saw that speech. It's an amazing speech. People are saying it might be the best speech of the convention. But let's think about Brian Schweitzer. Here's a guy. He's one of these new breed of sort of Rocky Mountain Democrats. And on the gun issue alone, he's in a very different place than people from the party in many other parts of the country. How do you reconcile that? It's a real challenge to the tent, it seems to me.
Well, this is Shirley Woods again, and I think that in some states they should permit gun usage for hunting and such where the culture does allow it. But what you have in your largest cities is that guns are freely flowing around. People get shot. Gang members have them. The police take them from the gang members. They record the information, the turnaround, the gun is right back on the street. And I think in Chicago, where Barack is from, the state of Illinois, that is what he's looking at when he is kind of teetering on the fence of saying, well, we do need to reform our gun laws, take the handguns away, get them off the streets, but let people keep their hunting guns, because hunting goes back generations with some people and some families and some cultures and in some cities and states. So you have to recognize that and respect that. But handguns in large cities, you don't need them.
I just want to point out, I'm Jen from Ellensburg, Washington, and actually, I mean, hunting is such a big part of the culture, and I grew up in a more urban area and then went to school in, you know, a Pullman, which is, you know, in the middle of the Palouse, a breadbasket for this part of the country, and then living in Ellensburg and learning about hunting, and that one of the interesting things, we compare actually sexuality education to driver's education and to hunting licenses. As soon as a child in Washington State, and it sounds like our law is changing, but as soon as they can take and pass the safety test, they can hunt with a gun supervised. The first part is education and safety. You know, but there are automatic or semi-automatic rifles that really, if you're not a part of our armed forces or a part of our SWAT teams or a part of our police forces, I'm still not comfortable with you having that. But I think the same argument can be made, the slippery slope, who gets to decide what guns go out where. And so I'm very comfortable having a good dialogue with Democrats who are completely supportive of the Second Amendment, saying that everyone gets to have whatever gun they want, because I want to have that conversation about, is there a continuum? And so come on over so we can at least talk about it and get something solved.
Well, that's a nice way to take us into one more sort of general question that I want to throw out to you before we end. When you have issues like gun rights, like abortion, like immigration, that are challenging, that are creating challenging debates within the party, how do you put those specific things aside and find your sense of sort of passion for the overall mission of the party? Asra.
This is Asra Hussein from Chicago, Illinois. I think that's actually the beauty of the Democratic Party, is that we can all disagree, but at the end of the day, we're not single-issue voters. We're looking at the big picture. And the Republican Party, they're trying to divide by creating single issues as what's going to decide the future of our nation, and that's not good for anybody.
Thank you. Let's go across here to Jeff. Jeff, how do you find a sense of unity when there are divisive, specific issues within the party?
Well, we don't vote on single issues as a party and as Democrats. We have diverse views, but in the end, we come together. And back to the issue about gun control in Branch Swatch in Montana, environmentalists and hunters can find common ground. That's what we do in the Democratic Party. We both want the same thing. We want pristine environments. We want to go out to places where we can hunt and have clean water. I'm from Pennsylvania originally. Deer hunting is the national pastime. And my whole family deer hunts. And it's a right for everybody. It's a pastime. And we don't want to take away people's hunting rifles and shotguns. That's not what we want to do. We're all in this together.
Thanks, Jeff. And Lakeisha, you've very much wanted to get in here for a while, so I'll let you end it off.
Okay. What makes us all Democrats is that we all can agree to disagree. It is the most beautiful thing about this party. I may not agree with you because you have something that's completely different from me. But at the end of the day, we can all come together. We can all compromise. We can all agree on something. We're not single issue voters. We're multiple issue voters. We all believe in the same thing. And that is what makes us one of the most gifted parties in the United States of America. I am very proud to be a Democrat. I'm very proud to be here in Denver. And I hope to see you guys again in 2012.
Well, thanks all of you for helping us get a better idea, I think, of what it is that binds you together as we head into this election cycle. Give yourselves a round of applause for participating today. Behind Party Lines has been produced by Stephanie Curtis and Michael Caputo, with help from Anna Wagle, Julie Seipel, and Rachel Miller. Our engineers here in Denver were Mike DeMarc and Craig Thorson. Thank you to Colorado Public Radio for so graciously hosting us, and thanks to WUNC in Chapel Hill, Oregon Public Broadcasting, and Minnesota Public Radio for bringing this hour to their listeners. Thanks to all of our guests this morning for taking some time from a busy convention week to try something a little different with us here today. And I can assure you all, we will be just as hard on the Republicans when we do this in part two. 1 week from now, the Republicans in St. Paul, the return of Behind Party Lines. I'm Jeff Horwich. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again next week.